Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. Got my co-host here, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. Today, it's a very special day because we're finally going to be talking. We're actually starting a series. We're not going to just do one podcast on this. We're going to do a series on our specialty, both of our specialties of obesity medicine, specifically pharmacotherapy, shilling out big pharma right now. We're going to be talking about who should be looking into this stuff, how to discuss it with your doctor. Maybe you should fly out to see my brother, or you could just go online and see me. We can talk all about that. But this is going to, I don't know how many of these are going to be in a series. This first one, we're going to be talking about like indications, and a few other little things. So why don't we just get started? So,
hold on. First of all, just like we would do if we were giving a talk at a conference, let's be clear. For right now, you have to tell me if there's anything I don't know, but for right now, we don't have any what we would call multiplicities of interest, conflicts of interest. We have no stake, financial stake in any big pharma. So as much as we joke around about shilling it out, as of right now, I'm not saying we're not going to speak on these someday, but we do not get paid for any medical company
No,
right?
There was a possibility, but I did not do it. So I didn't do it. So my one conflict of interest is that I am part of an online obesity company, but we do prescribe it, but it's not the same. So I don't know.
That's like your own medical practice. That's how that works. So yeah. Anyways, just to be clear, if we ever do, it would be for academic purposes, certainly. But for right now, we don't have anything to disclose. So just so people know, we're not actually shilling it out. But and I'll pull up some slides, as we get started. Anything else? Anything you want to say before I try to do this?
No, we'll people have their questions, but I think it's going to be a few part because we're going to talk about indications and contraindications right now, and then we're going to go into specific medicines over the course of these next few weeks, because I think this will be good for patients, number one. Number two, if they're clinicians listening, they're like, oh, now I actually understand this pretty well. So
is this working?
I wonder if
I have an intro slide up.
Looks like I can see it.
Can anybody? It's not live, so we can't ask if people if they see this.
This is only if you're on the video.
So for the podcast, you can't see this. But I just made a little intro slide for us. And this is a slide for objectives. So this is obviously made for physicians and other clinicians and stuff like that. But I think we do, even for people out there, we need to review when to even consider medications. Why do we even need medications for obesity? And, we have to revisit our other podcast about obesity as a disease. And that's really kind of the thing. We'll talk about, defining, diagnosing, the severity of obesity, et cetera. And, we can get into a little bit of some of the old weight loss meds. It's got a little bit of a jaded history going way back. But once we get into the specific meds, we'll talk about their mechanism of action and how they help people, how much they help people, side effects and benefits, et cetera, and then talk about individualized therapy. So first of all, let's talk about...
That slide says I'm a PharmD, by the way.
What?
The slide says I'm a PharmD.
I forgot to erase the... I screwed it up. All right, good thing this wasn't professional. So do you see this slide now? Basic energy balance model of obesity. Okay. So, let's talk about, you don't.
No, I don't see that. Oh, I don't see that slide.
Ruined everything. That's interesting.
Why don't we just,
I see. All right. Well, let's just talk through this. So let's talk about why obesity is difficult. Remember, obesity is defined essentially as a chronic, relapsing, progressive disease of excess or abnormally distributed adiposity that's really based upon dysregulation of the neuroendocrine energy balance control. You know, we can talk about the set point, the settling point, or the dual set point theory that, that people want to talk about, and the control of our energy balance in the hypothalamus, speaking to the hormones from our fat cells and our gut, our stomach hormones, our intestine hormones, and how this is hard for people. The biology makes it hard. And so when we gain weight due to a variety of things from the food environment, what we're eating, the availability, the high palatable food, and other issues, you know, psychosocial issues, sleep deprivation, and, you know, I don't know if we talked about the microbiome, obviously physical activity and exercise, and all these different genetic, environmental, physiologic, and psychological factors that cause weight gain. Where we hold it drives the disease, and then our biology really makes it hard for people to lose weight, and more importantly, to maintain that weight loss. So tell me your thoughts on that. Why do we need medications?
Yeah, I mean, the gist is that people, I mean, if you look at the data, it's pretty clear. When you put people on diet and exercise, which again, I'm shilling, I have my LiftRx. It's great for exercise. I think everybody should do it. I also have my nutrition coaching, my Big Rocks nutrition coaching. And I think everybody should at least give it a shot for lifestyle, comprehensive lifestyle. But when you look at the data, it's pretty clear that on average, with a comprehensive comprehensive program, like gold standard, you know, you're getting somewhere between around 6 to 8% total body weight loss over the course of like a year. And then over the years, that eventually becomes less and less. And the reasons, you know, Kevin Hall, will have on him on our podcast at some point. He goes over the mathematical models and looks at this a little bit closer. But the gist is, it's really hard to lose weight and keep it off because our bodies, from a biological standpoint, and our environments are fighting against us extremely hard. A lot of appetite. We're surrounded by food that tastes really good and it's easily overeaten with a lot of energy. You know, we're also not purely, we have social differences compared to animals as well. So it's not strictly just satiety. There's other components of why we eat, but The gist of it is that all these things are fighting against us, and we need biological tools, not just behavioral tools. Some people can get away with just behavioral tools, and that's great, and we do help with that, but there's going to be the majority of people will not, unfortunately, be able to lose as much weight as they want to lose and keep it off. There will be some people that do. And, you know, I have a bunch of those patients. That's always the argument, the people that, hey, I lost 200 pounds and kept it off and I'm doing great. Well, those people Absolutely. Are in the very like 0.001 percentile, you know, like it's nobody percent of people do that.
And everyone's different, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's different, and everyone has different lifestyle issues going on. So there certainly are those people who have very treatable lifestyle habits, people who are drinking sugary sweetened beverages all day. That some people don't know. We have a whole podcast on non-nutritive sweeteners. Some people have been convinced that sugary beverages are safer than diet beverages. Some, you know, people who cut those out and get rid of the thousands of calories a day they're drinking that unnecessary, they may not have the biological drive to regain the weight that they lose from that. Or, you know, eating out. Some basic lifestyle habits can certainly help people, and they may not have as much of that set point dysfunction as other people. You know, we have different genetics, different upbringing. People are on different medications. People have different medical problems. So everybody's different. And when you talk about that, you know, that 6-7% weight loss in intensive behavioral therapy trials, of course, that's an average, right? And so if we looked at all the people in that, you know, it's an average. So some people do really, really well. And some people don't do well at all. And some people gain weight. And some people progress with disease that's complicated, or that the obesity is complicated by. And a lot of people will just tell you, boy, I am hungry all the time, or I just can't be satiated, or I just have cravings. We talked about binge eating, or we'll have more stuff on binge eating disorders. But, you know, oftentimes also in those trials, and we'll talk about with medicine too, people who do really well right up front, you know, who lose a lot of weight right up front, they respond to whatever the therapy is, they go on and tend to do really well. So that early response to therapy we talk about, you know, if people lose 5% or more of their weight in the first couple of months, no matter what it is, diet, exercise, sleep, medication, surgery, they go on and tend to do really well later, regardless of the treatment.
Yeah. So that, long, you know, that's better, one better way long-term. For people to kind of better long-term outcomes with them. Okay, so let's go over the indications then. We talked about why it's probably needed. It's kind of this bridge in between lifestyle and surgery, although now our drugs are starting to get to surgery level, but it's still a bridge, I would say, in between. Doesn't mean you go from drugs to surgery no matter what. It's kind of that fills the gap. But sometimes people do. Some people bridge.
It's a spectrum. So, you know, disease severity of obesity, it really shouldn't be, we've talked about this, it should not be based upon BMI and the amount of adiposity necessarily. It should really be kind of based upon the severity of the disease complications or the risk of those complications. And the spectrum of treatment should be on that realm too, and but then personalized. Some people need surgery and medications. Some people only do surgery. Some people need medication. Some people don't need anything, and they do really, really well with the lifestyle habits we talked about. But going to the indications, of course, for people to understand. Now, the FDA indications, which are important because that has to do with coverage and whether or not you're going to, you know, get medication at all. You know, is classically, it is BMI centric, unfortunately, other than a little caveat to that. But if you have a BMI of 30 kilograms per meter squared or more, technically, the medications that we'll ultimately talk about are indicated purely by an FDA standard. And if your BMI is 27 or above plus complications, and it's not necessarily the severity of the complications per the FDA, but then it's indicated, which is a little bit unfortunate because, as we talked about in the Obesity as a Disease podcast, is that, you know, people with a BMI lower than that certainly have adiposity-based disease sometimes. They might have the disease of obesity, but these are technically based upon BMI.
Yeah. I think you can get rid of the screen. I can't even see it. It's going in and out of the dark, by the way. So 27 plus a weight related comorbidity. Yeah, it's just kind of, I don't know. It's not really helping. So for anybody listening, my brother has internet through Fisher Price. So it means that he's like lagging. He's talking over me.
We probably shouldn't say who is.
Yeah, no, it's your shitty internet.
Oh, great. we probably shouldn't tell people who the internet is because they'll probably sue us or something like that. But let's talk about more pragmatic indications for weight loss medications then. Like we said, I mean, real life people, they talk about always being hungry, not being satiated. They're trying to lose weight. People don't choose to have obesity. And if there's some very obvious low-hanging fruit, no pun intended, like sugary beverages, eating out, just some obvious educational things, and we can change that energy balance and lose the weight, that's great. But what if people don't respond to that lifestyle therapy? You know, what if people are trying and they have these FDA indications? Well, that's a time to consider medication to help battle the biology that's working against them. And then also there are people who do respond to lifestyle therapy, but then they start to regain their weight. And that's another, you know, more real life pragmatic indication. So if you're someone who has done really well with your lifestyle, then, you know, then you're dealing now with hormones that start working against you. You know, your satiety hormones go down, your leptin, that hormone that comes from your adipocytes, and hunger and preference for that hyper palatable, yummy, calorie dense food goes up. There's some of the metabolic adaptation that goes on. We're not quite burning the amount of calories that we should be for the weight that you just lost. And we can get Kevin Hall to talk about some nuances of that. But then we also struggle with some of the reward center stuff, the cravings, the desires. And what does that do? It drives weight back up. And so people who lose weight, do really well, often struggle the most. And so if you're one of those people, you know, you should really before, and we don't want you to regain too much weight because it's a disease process. And so that is something to talk to your physician or other healthcare team about.
Yeah, basically the patients that I have, they'll say, many patients say this, I've lost 40 pounds four times. I've lost 40 pounds four times in my life. I lose it, I regain it. And it just, I don't understand. I know how to lose weight. I just can't keep it off. And then they think it's a willpower issue. And it's like, no, it's literally your biology and your environment are fighting against you. Otherwise, if it were not the case, you would just keep it off. It's not a willpower thing. It's biologically driven. And some people can figure out the habits to like, I am going to push through this. And it becomes so automatic that they don't realize that they don't actually have to use their willpower that much. It's just automatic for those people. For other people, I don't know. They can't, they're not able to do it. Yeah. And I don't think it's a character flaw. I think it's biologically driven. So that's where we go. All right, let's actually intervene biologically then. Why not?
Yeah,
as long as it's safe. Absolutely. That's the whole point. Let's go into the history though, real quick. Doctors and patients were burned in the 90s with the fen-phen. There's phentermine and fenfluramine. Fenfluramine was the agent that had this serotonin receptor, HT2B receptor, and it maybe caused valvulopathies. That's what they saw a signal. Took it off the market. Doctors were prescribing it like hotcakes. And then ever since that point, even with these newer drugs, a lot of doctors are like, I'm not falling for this again. So that was patients, kind of, you know, and then, And then back in the, you know, they've gone through all sorts of things. They hear is DNP, which is a, what the hell is that noise going off in the background? Something's going. That's your computer. Holy cow!
No, I'm on call. I'm
oh my
paged.
God! Oh dear! Oh my God!
It's not
God.
An emergency. Don't worry.
Oh God! Someone's in. sir, I'm in a thyrotoxic storm, sir. No, I'm talking about obesity on a podcast. I've got to talk about it. Sorry. Anyway, so the other thing that people, there's something called DNP, an uncoupler. It's this uncoupler agent that basically helps you burn more calories, but it made people really hot, overheating, caused cataracts and potentially death. You see a lot of these, not a lot, but you see these case reports of people dying because it's always bodybuilders overdosing on it. It's not approved for weight loss, although I do know that they're trying to get one of these uncoupler agents to try to help people lose or burn more calories without those side effects. I don't know if they'll be successful or not, but then they tried giving people T3. You know, we've had many podcasts on
thyroid
medicine, except that
thyroid hormone.
So imagine, the active thyroid hormone. I've taken T3. I have Hashimoto's, so I've taken combinations. I'm back on just only T4 right now. But, you know, if you take too much of the active thyroid, you get thyrotoxic. You get hyperthyroid.
Yeah.
Heart rate starts going up. So you don't. It doesn't actually treat the underlying cause of obesity. We've talked the last podcast we did. We discussed all the hormones in terms of weight loss. And those with obesity actually have higher levels of T3 active thyroid circulating. So that didn't work out. Although they're still looking at different thyroid analogs to maybe increase calorie burning without these other thyroid symptoms, side effects. So then fast forward, phentermine, it's an anorectic. We're going to talk a little bit more. Yeah. Sibutramine. We're going to talk about these things. These are all
pretty popular.
They're all different, types of appetite suppressants. Sibutramine was taken off because of other signals of, I believe it was stroke maybe remember.
Well, unfortunately what they did with sibutramine is that this was a pretty a little bit more of a ramped up appetite suppressant. When we talk about phentermine, you know, it's amphetamine like, you know, amine, but it doesn't really have a lot of those amphetamine-like properties. Sibutramine had a little bit more of that, a little bit higher pulse blood pressure as I recall, and they actually studied it. It was contraindicated in people with established cardiovascular disease, but they decided to do a huge trial in it, the SCOUT trial, and it increased cardiovascular events, so bam, it was taken off the market. It kind of interestingly, though, so it was not a good medicine to use in that, the people who we already knew it was probably not right in, but when they did go back and look at it, this is not perfect, but when they looked at that trial, those who did actually respond with more than 10% weight loss actually had reduced cardiovascular events. Now, that's not enough to save it. That's off the market. And then we got into more of the recent ones starting in 2012. You know, the combinations and some of these medications that we'll talk about that are actually approved for long-term chronic use because it's a long-term chronic recurrent progressive disease, as opposed to some of the old ones that are still around and safe, like phenermine, which does work up in that area of the hypothalamus where that set point is that we're talking about to help people stick to their dietary efforts a little bit better.
Yeah. So we'll go over each of these probably with their own quick little podcast. But for this one, I think we're just going over kind of the overview. So the new idea since 2012, because phentermine by itself was approved for 12 weeks at a time, 3 months. And so that was the old thing. You start it. Oh, the FDA says now we got to stop it. So people stop and then they regain their weight. Then you start it, lose the weight, regain the weight after you stop it. This needs to be thought of as a chronic therapy, just like if somebody with hypertension, you put them on antihypertensive blood pressure medicine, their blood pressure gets normal. You don't go, oh, your blood pressure normal, let's stop the blood pressure medicine. You'd continue it because it's the reason it's normal is because of the blood pressure medicine. The reason people lose weight is because of the medicine. So you'd stop the medicine. They're going to regain the weight. What happens?
Yeah. But I always do. I tell people, though, that doesn't mean you have to be on it forever. You know, part of the reason we treat obesity with these medicines is to help people get off of other medicines. So the example of the blood pressure, one of the first medications I know you and I often have to stop a lot. We call it de-escalating our blood pressure medications. People always have to get off their blood pressure medications when they lose their weight. So it's not to say that you have to be on an obesity medication forever, but when we talk about some of these studies and these medications, unfortunately, what happens in all the studies when people stop them and they aren't doing all these other active things or using a lower dose or whatever it is that we'll talk about maintenance, they start to regain the weight. And it's shown in every single trial that they've done that with. So, it is a chronic recurrent disease. And so these are now studied and approved for long-term use because it is a long-term chronic disease.
Yep. So again, I think a primer would be our podcast on obesity as a disease. But if you have a BMI of 27 plus one of these weight-related issues, prediabetes, hypertension, I would even say PCOS. Anything like that. I would say knee osteoarthritis. Obstructive sleep apnea. You know, one of the things actually, interestingly, fatty liver would be a good one. You know, GERD is technically one, but like, you know what? I would just be careful because there's a lot of people with GERD who have had it all their life and it didn't change with the weight gain. So, you know, I would be careful, especially with the newer,
you know, you got to know that. Medicines. I mean, that's a history taking. Yeah. We'll get into that with those anyway. So
now here's something real quick. Somebody was asking ethnicity. Now the FDA does not change based on ethnicity, but we talked about our diagnosis of obesity, our diagnosis of obesity lecture. We talked about ethnicity does change BMI threshold for which someone develops obesity-related conditions. So I would say that if you are of South Asian, Indian descent, what's the number? 23, 24?
Yeah. Well,
it's changing.
Unfortunately, again, it's the FDA they don't care. But from an obesity perspective, if you have excess adiposity that's causing adiposity-based complications over 23. But, you know, I also, we're going to go down a huge rabbit hole now, but I mean, I think even in other ethnicities, you know, we could talk about sarcopenic obesity. It doesn't necessarily mean an obesity medication is indicated in those cases either, but you know, it's still, again, the spectrum of obesity is on this big, wide spectrum anyways. And, you know, we at least have to consider it as a disease and on that spectrum. And there are different ways to treat it, you know. Yeah. And these are one of them. But the FDA just doesn't care right now. So that's the way that is. And that may or may not be a good thing. I don't know that I have a hugely strong opinion. We should be able to use them as we see clinically appropriate, but we also don't want them just, you know, being put in the water, like some people would say. There's still medicines, you know, there's still pros and cons and risks and benefits and costs. You know, a lot of this is unfortunately driven by cost and coverage, which we have to advocate for because that's a huge problem.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to go over contraindications of each specific medicine because they all have different contraindications. But I would say, what are some good contraindications for just general for every single obesity medicine out there? Pregnancy is one. That's always the one.
I was going to say pregnancy. and that's not because pregnancy. Of the medicines per se. It's because we don't necessarily want people having active intensive weight loss during pregnancy, because some of the medicines probably don't matter. Some really, really do matter to the fetal development, and we'll get into that. But mostly that's kind of what I've always been told of. You know, disordered eating might be one of them. But on the other hand, some of these medications can really help with disordered eating. So there aren't a lot of contraindications across the board other than pregnancy.
Having a history of an eating disorder isn't an absolute contraindication. What I would be careful about those with, you know, there's discussion of those with bulimia and things like that, because like, hey, some of, like, as you said, some of these medicines can actually help, the underlying cause. So it's not an absolute contraindication. I have patients with histories of eating disorders who I still use it, you know, monitor closely and make sure everything's going okay. Because we're treating the obesity, and we can still treat both at the same time. That's actually, there are a lot of people that are uncomfortable with that, but that's actually a reason. That's not a reason not to necessarily treat. I'm trying to think of anything else. This isn't for vanity. That's a big thing. There's a lot of people. There's an article in Australia, TikTok. People are you know, going in, getting their GLP-1, which we'll discuss in a couple of weeks. But they're getting these shots, very powerful shots that should be reserved for those with obesity. And they're just using it for vanity weight. I knew that was going to happen. They're just paying cash and getting people to lose whatever. And that's not right ethically. The doctor shouldn't be doing that ethically. And it's just not, an indication.
This is not about cosmetics. And that's part of the problem is that, you know, a lot of insurances and even Medicare to some degree still considers obesity more of a cosmetic disease, which is really unfortunate. If you notice, the recurring theme we keep talking about is it's what's on the inside that counts. What harm is the obesity doing, or what risk is it going to do? So going back to the indications, it's not just about the weight. It's, you know, do you have complications? If you have severe complications of obesity and you've been trying and they're not just some very obviously easy parts of the lifestyle to treat, obesity medications are really indicated right up front. And, you know, we need to not delay this assistance for people.
Yeah. So I don't think there's anything else we need to chat about. I think next week we're probably going to start going over each of these medicines and going over the specific indications for each medicine. They're all the same with a 27 BMI and a weight related issue plus or 30 BMI, but then, well, you know, maybe certain populations that do well with each. Yeah.
The hydrogel that has technically slightly different indications.
We can just say it doesn't really work that well. So
I don't prescribe that one.
I don't care.
Niche, but
doesn't
we'll
work
talk
that
about
well. Maybe. Yeah, probably not. But all right.
Boy. Oh God.
Okay. Anyway, so for in the time being, you know, if you want to, I'm licensed in 28 different states. You can see me online. You can go to medicationsweightloss.com and see if you're, I mean, we have a quiz right there to see if you even qualify for it. But otherwise, review, send to a friend, subscribe to our podcast, and we'll talk next week all about these medicines.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.